All right, welcome to Return on Podcast, where we talk about the obsessions, the habits, and the hacks of the most successful e-commerce entrepreneurs. I'm your host, as always, Tyler Jeffcoat, and I want to welcome you to this episode of ROP. Guys, I am really excited about today's interview. My friend, I've known Chris, by the way, for like 5 or 6 years, but Chris Lalomia is joining the show today. This is going to be a very action-packed and refreshing episode for those of you guys. You know, Chris doesn't even own an e-commerce business currently, but has scaled his company from lone wolf to 40-person tribe, 40-person wolf pack over the past 10 to 15 years. Chris has been an impactful leader through the recession that was the last one in the financial crisis of 2008 and 9, and is now leading differently in 2023 through the current economic situation that we're in because of what he learned 15 years ago. Chris is really going to help me think through simplifying our offering, understanding what our customers' needs are, creating a company of performance and accountability, even when we're dispersed and distributed, right? What does it look like to pivot our mindset from lone wolf to wolf pack? And I think we might even touch a little bit on increasing lifetime value and considering subscription models if you stick around to the end. As always, Chris is going to end with a habit or hack that's given him an unusual return on investment in his life. Chris is a great guy. He's funny. The reason he has a successful podcast of his own is that he's a really hilarious guy to listen to. I think you're going to love this particular episode of Return on Podcast. Without further ado, let me dump you in to today's episode. It's time to maximize profitability and cash flow. It's time to learn habits and hacks from the best e-com CEOs. It's time for Return on Podcast with me, Tyler Jeffcoat. All right, and I want to bring in my friend, Chris Lalomia. Chris, how are you doing today, man?
Dude, I'm doing great now that I'm on this podcast with you.
Yeah, you know what, Chris? I was thinking the same thing. So, Chris, you and I have a few things in common. We both live in the great state of Georgia. We both hate Atlanta traffic, as you were dealing with a minute ago. And we both have these names that people butcher for sport. I'm just curious. Do you have any common screw-ups that people, like when people want to try to say your name, what do they say instead of your name?
Yeah, that's great. So it's Lalomia, right? But I get Lamomia, Lamomina. I'm like, dude, there's an L in there, right? Come on now. But that's what one of those things, and that's a Southern phrase right there. Is every time somebody tries to do it, everybody gives you the old Mr. Lomania, and you just go, "Oh, bless your heart, you don't know my
yeah,
life.
Oh, sir, bless his pea picking heart." Yeah. So my grandfather Chris actually like went by Jeff Jeffcoat for the majority of his career because people just call us Jeff constantly. Like the name Jeffcoat, they're like, his name's got to be Jeff. I don't know why he's got an article of clothing for the last name. We're gonna go and call him Jeffcoat. And so anyway, I can empathize with you where people are just, I mean, they're trying their best and they don't feel great about it, Chris, but they don't know how to say her name. So anyway, man, but
that's a riot.
So, you know, guys, Chris is at the helm of a couple of pretty exciting ventures. One is the business. We're going to talk about your journey some today, Chris, related to the Trusted Toolbox and how you know, have evolved from lone wolf to kind of leading a wolf pack in this scaling business that now includes, you know, 35 folks that are serving people around the Atlanta area. And then you also have a great podcast, The Small Business Safari, which I got to say this to you, I'm intimidated. I'm going to be honest with you, Chris. I'm a little intimidated. You guys are so damn funny on that show, dude. Like, have you always been funny? Is this like a thing? Have you been funny guy like your whole life?
I can go back and forth between serious and funny, but Alan and I have a lot of fun with that one. So he's my setup guy. And I'm always funny when I'm around him.
Yeah. Yeah. You guys bring out the like just perfect blend of like kind of goofball, but you still make some really heavy hitting points. So if you guys are looking to learn how to build your business, definitely just I'll make sure there's a good link to the Small Business Safari. Those guys do a great job there. All right, Chris, I want to talk about evolving businesses, leading through recessions, building a pack around yourself as a business owner. But maybe let's just take a step back to 2008. At the dawn of the last recession, Chris, you decided to for some crazy reason, start a business. What was going wrong in your life at that point in 2008 where you needed to go start a business?
Right. So I had a solid job at SunTrust Banks at the time. I was in the credit department doing credit reporting. So I probably would be able to ride out the recession there and make big bank like I was making. But no. I went out and said, screw that. I'm going to start a handyman business in 2008. It's recession resistant. Oh, everybody needs somebody. Everybody needs a handyman. Oh, God, I got this. Dude, it's a can't miss opportunity. Fast forward 15 and a half years and I'm an overnight success.
There we go.
Yeah. First force.
You know, you crawl and then you fall off cliffs and you crawl again. And then overnight, immediately you're here, you've arrived. And, by the way, dude, I worked for SunTrust in 2008 also, the artist formerly known as SunTrust. Sorry, we do need to make that disclaimer. And it is, they were also a part of my journey for deciding to start a business. Nothing against the company. Listen, Chris, it's not about SunTrust, but they taught me. What they taught me was that I'm not a corporate guy. That's what they taught me. They taught me that I'm a guy that wants to make an impact with relationships, and I had a hard time doing it from the confines of my middle management corporate seat. I'm assuming that's probably some of what you went through as well.
Yeah. So for me, it was I just didn't feel like I was using my whole brain. I've always wanted to have my own business. You know, they actually had corporate psychologists on staff at SunTrust, and I had to go see them twice because I might not have been like everybody else. And similar to you, I was an entrepreneur who wanted to be out the confines of the big army that is a big company. Because when you have a big company, everybody has to toe the line, has to march their steps. But when you're an entrepreneur, if you march those steps, you're probably going to go out of business. You got to be able to pivot, move, react, act, you know, all that you got to do to make things happen.
Yeah, I was reading a great book a few months ago by Eric Ries. He wrote the book, The Lean Startup, but his follow-up book, The Leader's Guide, is one of my favorites. And he talks about how big corporations, because of what they are, their job is to kill all dissonance and all variance from the plan. This plan makes us money. If Chris and Tyler aren't going to get on board with this plan makes us money, they get sent to the principal's office, right? Or to the, you know, staff psychologist. And, I do think that there are a lot of people that listen to this show that empathize with that. They're like, hey, I had a day job. My spouse thought I was an insane lunatic for trying to quit this great lucrative, you know, salary job to start a business. But I couldn't use my full gift mix and my full brain because my entire job was to follow XYZ. And I didn't like that. I like to ask the question, why? Like, why are we doing this? Does this matter? Right? Tyler,
please, my friend, you cannot have an original thought, sir. You have got to follow the lines. We don't need time for thoughts. You just got to do. Yeah, that was me. And I reported to the chief risk officer, reported to the CEO. So you're like, oh man, you were way up there. No, I was still middle management, and it was still painful, and it was still, you better run the line, and you had to follow everybody and follow in steps. And if you came in with an original thought or idea and you said, man, this is really going to help people, they're like, oh, no, we don't have time for that.
No, yeah, no doubt. Yeah. Well, you know, and then things flow downhill. As you may have heard, things do flow downhill. So in a recessionary market like 2008, when your boss is getting kind of getting their asses chewed in meetings, then lo and behold, the next day, you know, you find yourself in the same position. So, Chris, some people that listen to this show might be thinking, wait a minute. This is an e-com investing show. Why the hell did you bring on a guy with a skilled handyman service? And I'm glad you asked, because let me tell you why. Businesses both are the same in two important ways, and they're two important ways that I want to talk to you about today, Chris. The first way is that the average million-dollar Amazon seller or e-commerce brand is kind of a glorified lone wolf plus some like hangers on that has this delicate moment of deciding whether to pivot into a real business or whether to just keep getting in the truck and go fix the porch themselves. Right. So that core fork in the road happens in all businesses, but in particular in our two models. And then the second thing that we'll maybe get to if we have a little bit of time at the end is, at the end of the day, our ability to listen to our customers and craft offerings around what they need is kind of like the whole thing. Like nothing else matters, but that's not natural for a doer. Like I'm an accountant, you're a handyman. Like I'm good at doing a journal entry, learning to listen to customers and craft an offering that made sense to them. Took a little work, and I'm sure you're the same way. So like, Can you tell me a little bit of that lone wolf to pack story? Like, what was it? Did you have to have a shift in mindset for yourself, or was it like, no, I'm going to be the CEO of a 40-person company. That's just what I was going to do. Like, how did that go for you?
Yeah, no, I'm glad you asked. And I'll tell you, the one thing I think it's awesome is we had you on our podcast as well. And I love learning from people in businesses that aren't even close to mine in terms of industry, but are very close in terms of scalability and how you do it. So I think you can always learn something outside of industry. And for me, the lone wolf mentality is this. If you're a solopreneur and you're peddling goods and doing things on Amazon, and you start to build and need people to help work around you, you're a lone wolf. Well, that means you're confident. That means you're able to forage for your own food, provide your own shelter, and provide for your own family. So you're a very confident individual. You know, of course, you know, don't ask me about 3:30 in the morning. I can be very insecure at that point, but you got to know that about yourself, right? I mean, you're a very confident individual, and nobody can do it better than you because you have done it. You have succeeded to get to $1 million in sales at Amazon. It sounds really cool to me. That's a big number, man. Anytime you're up in those numbers, it's great. But you got to realize that about yourself. So you're a lone wolf. But lone wolves don't attract other wolves. And so eventually when you get into a wolf pack, how do you do it? And that's where I started to, you know, I actually wrote a book called From the Zoo to the Wild, and that's about my journey. And my first org chart, I had all the boxes. I had chief salesperson, I had chief marketing, I had customer service relationship, that's the person who answered the phones. I had the lead technician, I had the bookkeeper, I had them all, I had all the boxes. But of course, on day one, I filled every one of those boxes. Mm-hmm. And so I had to find where could I start to build my wolf pack? Where could I give up something where I know I'm the best, but I got to find somebody who's going to be second best. And so my first call was to somebody into my office because I needed help in the office because I wanted to be out there selling. I wanted to be the face of the company. I needed to be, nobody sells your company better than you. I wanted to be that guy. So I built that piece and then I built the office function and then invited them on the journey. That's the big thing I think with wolves and wolf packs is that I have employees, and if you don't have employees, you still have to think about them as your wolf pack. And one of the big things that I tell my now leaders in my company is that you have to treat every employee as a volunteer. They're volunteering to come on a journey with you. And if I'm paying my marketing guy to do a marketing service for me, and I just go, hey, man, deliver. Hey, what the hell, man? Come on, dude, deliver. No, I got to bring him in. I'm inviting him on the journey. I want to tell him what I want. This is where I'm going. Let me tell you how big we could be as the trusted toolbox, and I want you to be part of it. And that plays to a lot of our egos, and that's like we all want to be part of something bigger and see somebody else succeed through my efforts because, again, I'm still the best person in the room, right?
Gosh, that's so good. That that idea that you – it really is a – like if anyone out there has ever led a volunteer team, whether it's like whatever, Boys and Girls Club or at your church or anywhere where people – don't have money as the reason for standing in front of you, right? Like I remember volunteering at a 5K race that was raising money for like a Chick-fil-A thing like 15 years ago. And the guy that led that race was incredible because he knew exactly what you just said, Chris, that all 50 of us that got there at like 4:30 in the morning had better things to do and had jobs and didn't need to be there. And this was, and it needed to be about a journey that was more important and it had to be really compelling. And I think that's so rich, man, because as we lead our teams, shame on us if we can't find ways to enlist them in this journey and treat them. Like, I'm just curious, like, how has that played out for you? What does it look like to view your team as volunteers? Like, how does that change the way you talk to them and lead?
Yeah. So, of course I can do dictating and telling and demanding. There are times of that. It's not all altruistic love,
that's right.
Love, especially in our world, because we're serving a lot of customers. In their homes, which is a very emotional thing. And that's the other thing you got to realize is that when I started my business, I had been in B2B all my life. I never flipped a burger. I never served anybody in a B2C environment. And I started a B2C company. And that's what we're all doing is we're doing B2C right now. So we're dealing with crazy customers and expectations and trying to set those. So what I do with my volunteer team is I let them know this is the journey we're going on. This is what we're doing. Yeah, our customers are crazy. Let's get in their heads, understand who they are a little bit more. And then if I can give you a little bit more that makes your job a little bit easier and your day a little bit more seamless in this transaction, and you can go home at the end of the night and say, man, I'm really proud of that. And what is that? The thing I've got is with my handyman is my skilled lone wolves are also like artists, and artists who like to play gigs, you know, artists like pianists, like guitar players, you got a guitar sitting in your back. You know, if you want to go play a bar and be a, you know, be a gig player, again, you're counting on yourself. You set up your own gig, you get up there and then you're performing. And so my guys are performing each and every day for customers and they just want to have a good day. They want to have a good gig and have somebody slap on the back, go, man, that was really cool. I love what you did in my house.
Right.
And don't we want all of our customers to say that? We want to turn them into raving fans, you know, whether you're, you know, selling them a t-shirt or a bottle of, you know, or a new, whatever you guys are selling on Amazon, you want your customer to go out there and go, man, that was like the best transaction I ever had. And I really loved this product. It absolutely exceeded my expectations.
No, that's so good. So like, and I'm assuming this because it's true for my business and it's definitely true for a lot of our audience here at Return on Podcast, but you've got these guys, right? You've got some folks in the office, you've got some estimators, you've got your actual handyman out there getting the work done. You know, you're helping them unblock, but my point is that they're not sitting in cubicles next to each other, right? Like we're all part of this economy where we don't get to live as a pack as much as we used to, right? We've got wolves. They're part of the same pack, but they're so darn remote that it just takes a lot of effort and energy. I'm just curious, have you learned anything that's helped you help serve your team, get better as a leader with this kind of remote reality? Because I bet everyone that listens to this show gets that. They probably have a marketing person in LA. You know, they've got a content person in Chicago. They've got a couple of Filipino VAs and they've got a sourcing agent in the Ukraine. And it's like all like, how do I keep this team working together? Like, how has that played out for you?
So for me specifically, and I'll just talk to my business. I bring my entire team together once every other week for 1 hour on a Wednesday morning. And we do three things. We talk about our culture. We talk about something operational process that's going to help them, like how they get paid. And then we give back, you know, something technical. Hey, man, this is a new product that just came out. Here's a new tool you could use. Or here's a technique that maybe you guys don't know, but you can. So I bring them together, but I bring them together in a room that lets them know that they're part of something that's bigger than them. And what we also do every time we get together is we celebrate anniversaries. We celebrate birthdays. We celebrate birthdays or children's births. And then we also talk about what we do in the community in terms of volunteer efforts, because they want to know that we're actually trying to give back. You know, they're out there making it happen. I get to see them for 1 hour every 2 weeks. That's it. And that really is, it's a remote workforce. I don't get to see many of the people outside of the office very, very often. So they're out there humping it, making it happen, basically being that lone wolf. But when they come back to our wolf pack, what they see is that, oh, wow, you know, I'm part of something bigger. And I really like being part of this. I have pride now, not only in my work, but in what I have produced.
Yep. Well, and I think that success journey, and I've made the mistake of sometimes not doing this, and I'm sure everyone has, but like, it is so, what you just said is so important. Let's say that I'm selling a product. I'm online, I'm selling my product. If that product is a good product, then it is creating transformation in somebody's life. And I think capturing that transformation and making it really, really visible to my volunteer team that doesn't have to be there, they're choosing to be a part of the pack, is we are failing our teams if we're not giving them that kind of visibility. What's the, I've got a customer that does a great job of this, even though his team's really remote, like literally in different countries, using like a Slack channel to post 5-star reviews and just being like, hey, this is how this lady is using our product and she loves it. And then I think the other thing you said of really reinforcing the culture, the core values, the internal motors, the DNA, I think that's really good. And then people want to feel like they're working for the good guy. Like, right. I mean, isn't that like at the end of the day, you want to feel like you're a change agent for good. And you guys really giving back to your community, I think is really great, man. So I've always respected, by the way, I didn't tell you guys this, but Chris and I were actually in a mastermind together, like something like 5 or 6 years ago. This guy's an absolute monster. He's really, really, gifted. Don't let the like handyman business fool you. This guy's running a just monster shop. And yeah, dude, just really respect you. I mean, any other comments about that and the remote team thing before we move on to another question?
Yeah, I think the one thing I would say is, again, I have employees and I get to have them come in and see them. And if you can't do that, I get it, you know, because I've talked, you know, I came from the consulting and finance world before. And, you know, remote teams is a little bit different. But I will challenge you on this one. Is that you have a culture in your company, you have a culture in people who are working with you, whether you know it or not, and whether you're intentional or not. And being intentional in that culture has really helped me in my business grow. And as we've gotten bigger, my problems have gotten less. Even though I'm in the middle of a big one right now that you heard about before the podcast, but that's been a one and a blue moon compared to how it was in the beginning when I wasn't developing that culture and really inviting them in and thinking about them as lone wolves that I'm inviting on the journey of coming into the trusted toolbox. I was in that, you know, command and demand delivery mode, and it's changed. So now when I bring everybody together, that one hour every other week, I don't say anything until I say kicking it off, and then I go sit in the back and I don't say anything until the end. Everybody else runs the rest of it.
It's amazing. I love it. So I want to, you know, not to be a downer here, Chris, we're talking about recessions a little bit. I was just curious kind of as a final comment about this, you know, I've admitted before on my podcast, I've never been the CEO during a recession. I just haven't. 2008, I was working for SunTrust like you were, and you know, I'm a couple years younger than you are. Here's my question. What did you learn in 2008 that is impacting how you lead in 2023?
Yeah, that's a great question. I will tell you, the start of 2023, we were told the recession is coming. Mm-hmm. If you go back and start looking at what economists tell you, we were going to have it. We're going to have a pullback in people working on houses. We're going to have that malaise after everybody worked on their homes. And so it was going to happen. And so what I did was I leaned into it. I actually increased my advertising spend this year. I told my team we are in a recession and that's a good thing for us. And here's why. And I let them in on that. And so now then when they went home and talked to their families, and it actually, one of the stories got back to me like, hey, did you tell your team you're in a recession? I said, well, technically, yeah, I told them. I said, the technical definition of recession from banking is 2 quarters of GDP decline and we were in it. So it just didn't feel like it, but this is what it means for us because of everything we've got. And we've actually had, we've grown this year pretty well. And so we've had a good year doing it, but I let them in on the secret. Don't be afraid of the recession. It's going to help us. It's going to be okay. Because in 2008, it wasn't okay. It was really hard. But there's no signs of that at all that I can see right now. And looking at 24, for me, I would tell you, I just came away from a national conference where the economists, again, told us it's going to be a pullback. My experience has been, though, is that for me, the election cycle in the U.S. is a big deal. So the presidential election cycle, what happens is everybody gets really tentative and don't know what's going to happen. And I just don't know when that's going to happen again. So, for example, and I'm not going to get political, but it's important to know this because it pulled back my business. Is that back when Hillary Clinton looked like she was going to be a slam dunk president of the United States, and this Trump character got involved in August, we were cranking along until July. And then August, when it became a real thing, like, oh boy, what's going to happen? All of a sudden, our spending slowed way down. Mm-hmm. And then as soon as the election's over, again, don't care about your party, you all started spending money with me again, and I was thrilled. But so that's what I'm looking at next year, is that of the 12 months, we're going to have 3 or 4 that are going to be a down cycle that we have to work through.
Yeah, I think that's great. Something I want to confess is I think we were a little bit slow acknowledging the pressure on our market, Chris, back at the beginning of 2023. We heard the same economist, and here's where I think I struggled. I just want to take ownership of this, is the needs of our customers were evolving more quickly than I was evolving as a leader, and maybe more quickly than our team was evolving our offering. In fact, there was probably more need, to your point, there's probably more need than there was the year prior. But we were a little slow to react. And so thankfully we've kind of come through like sometimes you learn lessons by listening to an economist. Sometimes you learn lessons by getting flattened a little bit, you know, and so sometimes a little bit of both, right?
Yeah, I hear you. But
I just want to encourage anyone who's listening to this. I love your mantra there, Chris. I'm going to go to my team and say, hey guys, okay. The deck right now is that we may be in the middle of a recession. It may get worse. We don't get to opt out, but we get to overcome. And it's time to listen to our customers. It's time to participate in the winning side of a recession. Every recession is winners. And so I think, I don't know, for those of you guys that might be seeing session counts go down or see products slowing, this is the moment to make sure you kind of pivot your brain into thinking about your customer. What does she want? What is it that makes her day better? And I'm just, I don't know, maybe this is a natural kind of a segue, Chris, into the second part of the conversation. Like you and me, we started businesses. We both started businesses that technically, like I'm an accountant by trade. Like you had done some handyman work. You're a lot handier than I am. Like we're qualified to do the work. And as we've evolved as businesses that have teams, it's become more important for us to be professional marketers. This kind of idea of listening to our customers, responding to his or her needs. I'm just curious, what have you learned over the past few years that's helped you become a better listener of your customer story and a crafter of your offering that kind of meets the needs of that person?
Yeah, that's a great question. So again, I started a B2C company and I had never been in one. Even though I built the business plan, had it all out there, it literally hit me 2 weeks and into it. It was like, oh my God, I'm in a B2C market. What in the hell am I doing here? So what I had done from the very beginning is I had created avatars for my people. And the avatar is, who am I selling to? And for us, it was the boomers who were in large homes around Metro Atlanta, who had a busy family of four, but they had a 3,500 to 4,000 square foot home. Didn't have any friends or family around in the area that could help work on the house, needed to outsource that. So we developed our avatars. One of the things that I have switched or shifted my avatar in the last year is these people called millennials. And they're supposed to be bad, bad people, millennials, because they're lazy. They just expect everything for nothing. But no, what I really learned about them, and back to learning about your customer, is that millennials are obviously much more technically savvy than me in my 50s, but they're also more willing to outsource. They're willing to outsource their food delivery. They're willing to outsource their food shopping. They're willing to outsource a number of things. And so as they buy houses, they don't want to buy their mom and dad's house. They're buying smaller homes in general. But what I found out about them is that they expect good service. They expect a lot more communication than we had been providing in the past. So now we have a text messaging platform. We bundle our services more because they're more willing to do that. And so what I'm talking about is, you know, people who, you know, hey, I'm going to get Chipotle. You're going to go get it? No, I'm just going to have it Uber delivered. Okay, so you just bundled that service. So you, instead of a $9 burrito, you're going to pay $16 for your burrito, but you're cool with it because you didn't have to leave and you got the service you wanted. So
I'm not going to lie. I'm apparently the oldest millennial, being born in 83, or maybe like really young, you know, Gen X or whatever. And I don't feel great about it, Chris, but that's exactly the way I view my life. Like if you can give me a solution with great communication and it's like 10% more now, if it's a $9 to $16, I might be hauling my ass down the street to Chipotle, 'cause I'm a little bit cheap and a bit of, maybe that's because I'm the oldest version of a millennial. Maybe there's a sliding scale. I don't know. But the idea of like prioritizing convenience and prioritizing you solving my entire problem and being willing to pay a premium for that level of service. And frankly, and again, I don't always feel great about this, but being willing to pay a subscription premium even sometimes for that is, yeah, man, I'm there, buddy. I get it. I completely understand.
And so that shifted the way we marketed to our customers. Again,
okay.
I have a limited marketing budget. You know, there are certain percentages out there that are typical. I've usually been half to a third of what everybody else spends. Because of the way I put my marketing program together and how I really went after my avatar, but to that, I want to say the word pivot, but to recognize that our customer today is a little bit different. And as the boomers are aging out and downsizing their own homes and getting out and moving, the Gen Xers are moving in, but the millennials have moved in as well. And understanding how to market to them is a different thing. So back to understanding your customer, the pain point now is, you call us, we answer. You go to our website, you can schedule an estimate. You go to our website, you can send in a chat form and you will have somebody call you back in the morning. I've had on the estimates, I my first online estimate ever set up was set up at 3:30 in the morning. And I'm like, really, 3:30 in the morning to come look at your house? I'm like, you know what? I'm going to go see this crackhead myself, because who the hell at 3:30 in the morning says I want to have service? Well, the crackhead turned out to be a ER night nurse, and that was on her break. And it's the only time she could do it, because when she go home, she's working a second job, I believe she told me, and then she also is sleeping. So when I went to look at her, she said, yeah, I need service. And she was the millennial, and she was a single female, and she needed to know somebody she could trust. And playing to that, we were accessible for her, and we made it easy to do business with us. And she got to hit the easy button, and we got the work done. So that's really one of the things that's been, I find very fascinating, is getting into people's heads about what is a need versus what is not a need.
So, and I just want to encourage this out there, because this, that thing that Chris just said applies to every business type out there. If I can get really, really, really focused on my exact avatar, I can spend half as many dollars on my marketing in the right marketing channels to attract exactly that person. And so that's the first thing I heard you say, that we've got to do some work to understand exactly who our customer is. And it is possible that that customer is shifting. That was the other thing I really heard from you there is, you know, the business that I owned prior to this one, Chris, was in kind of the Alzheimer's senior care. So one of the reasons we started that business was because, wow, this like tsunami of baby boomers is aging. And then they've got a lot of the wealth in the world and they're going to have problems. And then we can help them solve those problems. But what we are actually seeing, we're seeing it every single year now, is a shift in buying behavior and buying power from the baby boomers who are aging, like my dad, who's in his mid 60s, to me, who's going to turn 40 later this month, right? And so this might be an opportunity, if your product has been positioned for one buyer type, to reassess whether it could be repositioned, and then to make sure that you're focusing those marketing efforts, and not just the marketing efforts, but the customer care efforts. I think that was the second thing I heard you say, is like, hey, there's a reason that chatbots do really well on your Shopify website, because millennials like them, right? It's that kind of thing. And so how do we remove friction? The final thing I'll add here is that, especially when it comes to selling things online, that thing that Chris and I just talked about, that people that are 40-ish are really, really likely to sign up for a subscription. Like if you have, I was talking to a friend the other day who sells a product that has like a replacement filter. He makes a little bit of money on the product. He makes a lot of money on the filter club, where people sign up for it and they just get the replacement filters every 3 months. And so find ways to turn your product into an ongoing relationship with your customer, and you can increase your LTV and your profitability per customer quite a bit.
Yeah, no, I love that stuff. In fact, it's got me thinking more about my business and how to do that as well. But I mean, when you talk about the avatar, one of the things I'm really proud of the way we did it, I actually worked with a consultant who helped me on that. Because we weren't just talking about their homes. We're talking about how many vacations they took a year. Where do they go on vacation? Mm-hmm. What do they drive? What do they do for fun? And when you started to find out what they did for fun, if you're a busy family of four, who drives your family activities? Your children. Mm-hmm. And your children. And then, so where do your children do? Well, they might be in band. They might be in soccer. They might be in baseball, football, basketball. Doesn't matter. But your social life now starts to revolve around your kids' activities, and you start to make friends with those people. So from that, we learned to, you know, do some advertising around schools. So I sponsor a couple school teams. It works out pretty well. I mean, but again, it's not a big ticket for us. That works for me. It doesn't work probably for you online, but if you can start to find out what these people are doing for fun, or how they're looking for your goods or your services that you provide, mm-hmm. Look at what they're doing for fun and how they're doing it. And that's that has been really eye-opening.
And maybe a quick adding to that. I don't know if you know, I like watch a little bit of YouTube. I'm kind of a nerd, so I'm watching videos or whatever occasionally. And Google's recent advertisement that I'm seeing pop up constantly, it's annoying. I want to click through the ad, but I'm not paying for the YouTube premium, so I get the ads. And this ad says, is basically the essence is, turn your customer's curiosity into business. It's like that kind of thing. And so like, if we can figure out where in the universe our customers are curious, where are they looking to learn about fixing their porch? Where are they looking to solve this problem? And I got to tell you, I can't tell how many times it's like you're sitting at your kid's basketball game and someone's talking about like their porch, right? I mean, that does happen. Or you're playing poker with your buddies down the street because you finally got your wife in bed with a glass of wine and your kids are sleeping. Right? Thank you, Jesus. I've got a minute. Let's go play cards and drink a beer with my buddies. Like for you, for your business, that's where that curiosity happens. It takes place where you're like, bro, Emily keeps chewing my ass for not fixing this porch thing. I don't feel good about it. I'm trying to survive here. And your friend's like, man, the trusted toolbox solves your problems, right? Like, and so taking that same mantra and applying it to like an e-commerce brand to say, okay, what problem does my product solve? Who does it solve it for? And where does that person, where is their butt seated when they're thinking about the curiosity of solving this problem? And for us, it might be something like TikTok, or it might be something like YouTube Shorts, or it might be something like getting involved with podcasts. The people who are like, by the way, dude, I'm going to confess something. I don't know if my wife can hear me. She's not going to like this. She is a jigsaw puzzle junkie. And I'm learning. There is an entire subculture of people, Chris, who like watch all the YouTube videos and time themselves solving jigsaws. Like, that's Emily. That's not me. So she's going to be hanging out in different places than I am when she's looking for products related to that. And if you want to sell her a jigsaw puzzle, you need to be there. And so anyway, I think that's kind of my takeaway from what you were saying there, man.
Yeah. Anything well else? Said.
No. Okay. Dude, here's where I always like to end any conversation, whether it's with a lone wolf or a pack rat or whoever else it might be, is, you know, we're promising people a return on the investment. Chris, they've given us 35 minutes of their time here. That's outrageous. So I'm wondering, is there a habit, hack, practice, rhythm in your life that you feel like has given you an unusual return on investment?
Yeah. So probably for me, I'm a pretty good multitasker. So, you know, obviously I love my phone. I'm talking to you on my laptop. Got to have that with me. But I think the thing that helped grow my business like I wanted it to was nothing more than I put on my uniform every day. I wear the same uniform. You know, this is a podcast. You can't see me, but I got the Trusted Toolbox on my shirt. Identify with the brand. I'm not saying you got to do that, but that putting on that uniform every day, that was okay. It's time to get started. And sometimes it's hard to get started in the morning. You know, I mean, we all have those days, guys. You're right. And by me putting on that uniform, it's time to go solve a problem. And so that's what I go like, you know what? Today I get to go solve problems. So that's my hack. That's how I keep going. That's how I persevered through the lean times that were tough. And believe it or not, I've had lean times even later on. It's always been a roller coaster for me. So we're finally on the upswing and things are looking good. But that's been my hack. Put on the uniform and go solve a problem.
Gosh, I absolutely love that, because as somebody who's working more from home, as a lot of our audience does, and maybe you're in like an apartment in Manhattan where you've got like one room, or maybe you're in a house like me and Chris are here, but engineering your energy around, okay, it's work time. I'm clocking in, baby. I've got my seller account shirt or my Trusted Toolbox shirt on right now. I'm a problem solver. I'm a transformational relationship guy. I'm a guy that leads volunteers to do what they want to do, which is serve our customers. Like, I think, I don't know if you've ever experienced this. I know I have, of like sometimes feeling like I'm always in the muddy middle of kind of working, but like, if you can like uniform up, you know, kind of like, all right, going into battle, I could see that being a really powerful hack. I appreciate you sharing that.
Yeah, man, that was fun.
Chris, if people wanted to learn more about you, obviously, by the way, I just want to say this, guys, if you're anywhere near Atlanta, hey, listen, if you're a baby boomer with a 3,000 to 4,000 square foot house, or maybe you're the millennial that just bought that house, the Trusted Toolbox is definitely, we'll make sure the links are in the show notes here, but it's definitely the company you want to call for your handyman, kind of light remodeling repair kind of work. Chris's team is amazing. Would definitely recommend them. But beyond that, Chris, like, how can people learn more about what you're doing? They want to follow you. They want to learn from your experiences, that kind of thing.
Yeah, man. So I've got a website, chrislalamia.com, with all my different brands I have on it. But I'm on Insta, LinkedIn, Facebook, and I believe it or not, I'm on TikTok too. So I just show you that old guys can try new things. So go out there and check me out. Try to put as much stuff out there as I can.
You know, old guys with great haircuts can try new things. That's just what we're learning here. So
thank you. Right here.
Chris, this has been great. Listen, for those of you guys that can't spell Jeffcoat with one F or Lalamia, we're going to have these links, these names, these direct access to Chris in his profiles in the show notes. And I just want to close the show by saying thank you. Thank you. Thank you for giving Chris and I your time. Your energy is valuable. We're grateful for you. Hope you have a wonderful week. We'll talk to you next time. Cheers.